It's 19 hours 30 UTC on Monday, November 27th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
Police are so unpopular that the stadium of more than 60,000 people booed loudly when the nation's police commissioner last week pledged loyalty to new President Emmerson Mnangagwa during his inauguration.
That was Anita Powell. Also today, a chorus of booing may have contributed to Zimbabwe's political change, and a longtime expert in Zimbabwe's healthcare system passes away. Good evening, I'm Chidonjere on VOA Zimbabwe Today. We'll have all those stories and more coming up. In our lead story, Zimbabwean security forces say order has been restored and they will be returning to the streets. But that announcement was met with fear for many Zimbabweans, who remain weary of men in uniforms after years of abuse. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Harare.
These are words that should calm and reassure.
The situation in our country has returned to normalcy. We wish, therefore, to advise the nation that the Zimbabwe Republic Police is now assuming its role as stipulated in the Constitution of Zimbabwe under Section 219.
That is police spokeswoman Charity Chiramba announcing police would return to their beats and conduct joint patrols with soldiers in central Harare, less than a week after soldiers took over security duties during the political upheaval that forced President Robert Mugabe to resign. But in Zimbabwe, where human rights groups have accused the police of shocking brutality, arbitrary arrests, and extortion, these words bring little comfort. Police are so unpopular that the stadium of more than 60,000 people booed loudly when the nation's police commissioner last week pledged loyalty to new President Emmerson Mnangagwa during his inauguration. Activist Promis Mokonnonzi says he has lost count of the number of times he has been arrested. Maybe 20, he says. Many have been in the course of protesting against Mugabe. But also, like many Hararians, he has run across many illegal police roadblocks. Here is his account of an incident a year ago.
Then suddenly there were police officers who just emerged and they sort of manhandled me and took me to some secluded place where they tried to say, can you just pay a bribe and you go? To which I flatly refused and said, no, I don't want. You have to take me to the police station if I'm under arrest. And so they took me to a police station, to Harare Central Police.
There he learned he had been charged with a litany of offenses, from resisting arrest to insulting the president, which is illegal in Zimbabwe. The case was eventually dismissed. Jacob Mufume of the People's Democratic Party told VOA the police force's behavior going forward could improve or undermine the legitimacy of the new government.
You say police are going to behave normally. We get alarm bells because they've been behaving outside the bounds of the law. We need a transformation, a change to the observance of the law, treating civilians with dignity, doing their duties without corruption, not asking to be paid for doing their work, and behaving like we are in a democratic society.
Police spokeswoman Chiramba would not take questions. When VOA asked her how police would attempt to regain the trust of Zimbabweans, she smiled and did not answer. Anita Powell, VOA News, Harare.
In the coming days, President Emmerson Mnangagwa is expected to name his cabinet, replacing cabinet ministers who had served under former President Robert Mugabe. Many Zimbabweans are looking to the cabinet choice for an indication of how Mnangagwa will govern and what his priorities will be. Dunga Milinkomo from VOA's Zimbabwe service joins us live in Studio 22 to talk about the expectations of the new cabinet. Welcome.
Thank you, Chido.
So has there been any news about when the president will announce his new cabinet?
There is speculation and indication that he will be announcing his cabinet this week. It could be tomorrow, it could be the day after, it could be Friday. We don't have the exact date. But a President Mnangagwa appointed two cabinet ministers temporarily today. He picked former finance minister Patrick Chinamasa to act as finance minister, and also he appointed Honorable Simbarashe Mumbengegwi. Mumbengegwi is acting foreign affairs minister. He has served in that capacity before, and Chinamasa is also served as finance minister before. So these are temporary appointments because he, you know, when the coup happened, we know the government was removed, but officially the government had not been, the Mugabe government had not been dissolved. So what President Mnangagwa did to the today was to dissolve that, you know, cabinet and appointed these two acting ministers. You will realize that these are very strategic ministries. That's why he saw it necessary to have ministers acting for the meantime while he's working out on his cabinet. We are expecting that to come. I'm not sure about tomorrow. Some people are saying tomorrow, but I'm guessing it could be Wednesday going forward, but definitely sometime this week.
Well, thank you. So a lot of people have been noticing since the transition, there have been no female presence. Do you think this is something that the president will, you know, address or maybe add a female to the cabinet?
Well, I'm not very sure what you mean by, you know, female presence, because since the coup occurred, what we have seen is that there hasn't really been constitutional order. When there is a coup in a country, it means the constitution is suspended. So previously, people, especially women, have complained that there haven't been enough adequate representation of cabinet, of women, either in cabinet or in parliament. So really, going forward, President Emmerson Mnangagwa is under pressure to balance his cabinet to make sure he's gender balanced. And also, you know, at the same time, make sure he brings in very competent people, people who can deliver, because, as you know, the economy is in a bad shape, and people are clamoring for very competent people, men and women, you know, who can bring this economy back to its feet.
So I know another point that people were noticing was the opposition party was asking for an inclusive government. Do you think that this is another thing that he will address? And if he doesn't, will that affect the promise that he made that this is a new government and he wants change as well?
I don't think he will. And here is why. When at his inauguration on Friday last week, President Mnangagwa said that elections will go ahead as scheduled, meaning they will be held next year around, you know, July, August. And by sticking to that timeline, it means that, you know, he doesn't have any plan for any transition, because if he were to put in place a transitional authority, a transitional government, I'm guessing it would have to go beyond that timeline. And today, we our reporter Blessing Zulu spoke to Mr. Morgan Tsvangirai, the main opposition MDCT leader. He says his party is not planning on begging for any positions or going into any transitional authority with the ZANU-PF. He says that's a no-no, is out of the question.
So my final question for you is, with all the reports you've been hearing and reporting yourself, have you heard any more concerns from the Zimbabwean people about his cabinet, what they expect or what they, you know,
like I just said, people are expecting a gender balanced, especially women, they're expecting a gender balanced cabinet. They're expecting competent ministers who can bring Zimbabwe back to its rightful place in, you know, geopolitics, in the global economy. They want the creation of jobs, a cabinet that can create jobs. Right now, there is no money in the banks. We have a serious liquidity crisis. One of our correspondents did a story on cash shortages today, and there is no money in the banks. People were given, were being given, you know, coins, bunches of coin like this. You go to the bank, you want $100, you are given a bunch of coins like this. So that's a crisis, really, that needs to be addressed. And people are saying, Mr. Mnangagwa, you said last week during your inauguration that tackling the economy, the cash crisis was going to be your first, you know, point of call. So they are expecting this cabinet to come in very quickly and also to tackle that you know, crisis. And also on who might be, you know, coming into the cabinet and who might not. We don't know for sure who's coming in, but we know who is not coming into this cabinet. We know Jonathan Moore is not coming. We know Sevia Kasugwere is not coming. We know Ignatius Chombo is not coming. Why? Because these are kingpins of the so-called Generation 40, you know, cabal that has been fighting Emmerson Mnangagwa. So it's incomprehensible that he would, you know, ignore their fighting, you know, their wars in ZANU-PF, and all of a sudden say, Jonathan Moore, come and serve in my cabinet. Kasugwere, come and serve in my cabinet. That's not going to happen. But
well, thank you so much for stopping by to talk to us.
I'll be back next. When is your next show?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. I'll be back tomorrow to finish.
Okay.
Thank you so much. You're welcome.
A court today denied bail for Ignatius Chombo, Zimbabwe's former finance minister who has been arrested on corruption charges. He will now remain in custody until his court hearing on December 8th. Chombo appeared in Harare's court today, along with Kudzai Chipanga and Innocen Hamandiche, both former leaders of the Youth League of ruling ZANU-PF party. Chipanga and Hamandiche have been charged with undermining the commander of the defense force and spreading rumors. They also were denied bail. The men are members of a party fraction that had been loyal to former President Robert Mugabe. They are among several political leaders once close to Mugabe or his wife, Grace Mugabe, who have been detained by the military since it took over nearly 2 weeks ago. Chombo and Chipanga say they have been mistreated and injured since they were detained. The military has denied those allegations. Zimbabwe has no shortage of energetic, educated young people, many of them college graduates. But what the country lacks is jobs, and the pressure is on for the new government to turn the situation around quickly. VOA's Anita Powell talked to young people on the streets of the capital, Harare, who say they want the new president to deliver on his promises and allow more young people into the government leadership.
Innocent Kagadora should not be here. Since he graduated from the University of Zimbabwe in 2015, he has spent 14 hours a day on a rough Harare street corner, selling phones out of a backpack. He's an example of Zimbabwe's soaring youth unemployment problem, which many critics blame on former President Robert Mugabe. His colleagues here call him Comrade Graduate. On a good day, he said, he takes home $10. Not enough, he says, to help his widowed father.
It hurts him a lot to say, my son has a degree, my son is educated enough in Zimbabwe, but he can't even afford, you know, to send me groceries other than the month.
So help me God.
The recent swearing-in of President Emmerson Mnangagwa has given many young Zimbabweans a shot of hope. He has promised to improve the economy, and students say they plan to hold him to that promise.
On the first full day of his presidency, student leaders met in the capital to strategize on mobilizing the youth vote for elections scheduled next year. Activist and student organizer Ostalo Siziba.
We will basically be calling him to account in terms of the things that he has promised. So every citizen, every young people are ways to see these things getting into reality.
Some, like Hagadora, also want to see younger people in powerful positions.
Let's have technocrats, not just bootlickers of the regime, not bootlickers of the leadership who are being put in those positions. When we have those people now, I think they can contribute significantly. So what we want now is to say, we're encouraging our government to say, let's look at other countries. Look at France right now. It is one of the youngest leaders in the world. So when you look at that, what does it mean for the nation? I think it's the realization now that the youth are not just leaders of tomorrow, but they're the leaders of today and tomorrow.
At his alma mater, psychology major Nyasha Choga says she wants leaders to change their mentality and focus on the future, not the glories of the past.
You listen to them, most of their speeches, they're still talking about the liberation struggle. I appreciate what they did, yes, but I think it's time for us to move away from that now. The ideas back then, they are not fit for the world that we're in right now.
And they worry about the youth coming behind them, like 16-year-old Advocate Kambeu, who really shouldn't be on a Harare Street corner selling $11 shoes on a school day. If he could afford school fees, he says, he could do big things.
I want to do politics. I think I'm talented in politics.
Mnangagwa has laid out an ambitious program of economic reform, and millions of energetic, talented young Zimbabweans, like Innocent, Ostalos, Nyasha, and Advocate, are counting on him to deliver. Anita Powell, VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today Live from Voice of America's Studio 22. I'm Chidonjere in Washington. At 47 past the hour, we continue with news about Zimbabwe's political changes. Broken life, driving backwards, making all the wrong turns, saying all the wrong words, dodging angels.
Cost a mansion. Gold rose petals while we standing. Came from the concrete, take a chance. Pop gold ace like a Xanny. I just need the blessing from your family. Broken lies. Ain't no love without us. It will die. Roses turning to dust every night. We get more popular. Wrong is right. When it comes to us, oh, let's not be alone. Let's not be alone.
Mm-hmm. Tonight, let's be selfish, selfish. Tonight. Let's get selfish, selfish, baby. Tonight. Tonight.
Much can be said about how Robert Mugabe's rule came to an end. In that narrative, it is easy to forget the name of one person, Magura Magura Charambira, who led the booing of former First Lady Grace Mugabe early this month. That incident set in motion events that led to new political leadership in Zimbabwe. Taura Ishawa recently had an exclusive interview with Charambira and filed this report.
Magura Magura Charumbira becomes animated when he discusses the ruling ZANU-PF party, of which he says he's a member. In early November, in Bulawayo's White City Stadium, Charumbira led the crowd in booing former First Lady Grace Mugabe. The incident angered former President Robert Mugabe, who said he was tired of constant insults of his family and himself, which he blamed on Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. The 93-year-old Mugabe then fired Mnangagwa, starting off a chain of events that eventually led to his own resignation from the presidency. Charumbira says he was inspired to boo Grace Mugabe by his respect for liberation war fighters because many people believed she had denigrated them.
We were very angry. It's not only me who were angry. Almost everyone in this country, in Zimbabwe, they were so angry and they were so upset about that behavior. So that's what gave us courage to say, no, enough is enough. We need to respond towards that. We need to stop that.
Although he praises Mugabe, the nation's first president, Charumbira says he was getting more and more dictatorial.
As Zimbabweans, from today onwards, we are relieved from sorrow. We were not even happy about the leadership which was there. In fact, the former president, Comrade R.G. Mugabe, I'm sorry to say this, but I have to say it today. Around 1980s, he was good, and he was running this country in a very, very good manner. But as from around 2008, he became a dictator. It was a problem.
Charumbira is unapologetic in his support of the newly inaugurated President Mnangagwa, even though he has a reputation of being ruthless in cracking down on dissent. Charumbira still has a pending case in the Bulawayo Magistrates Court on charges of incitement to public violence and insulting or undermining the authority of the president in connection with the booing incident. His lawyers say the charges are trumped up. Independent analyst Didmus Dewa says judging by the extent of the infighting within ZANU-PF over his succession, partly fueled by his wife's apparent ambition to seek higher public office, it probably was inevitable that Mugabe would fire Mnangagwa, but he says Charumbira's taunting act cannot be dismissed as insignificant, describing it as a catalyst for the drama that unfolded in the country in the past few weeks.
We must understand that in the course of history, there is need for an incident which becomes the catalyst or the trigger to processes and political events. In this case, the Magura incident of booing the First Lady at the White Seat Bulawayo Interface Rally became the catalyst.
While many in Zimbabwe are uncertain of how Mnangagwa will govern, for the moment, Charumbira and many of his ZANU-PF supporters are welcoming the change. Reporting for VOA from Bulawayo, this is Taura Ishawa.
Zimbabwean women on social media are pushing to increase women's participation in the political process. They also are calling for more discussion nationally about issues such as gender equality, gender-based violence. Here are a few of those comments. Teardrop ZW says, counting on our new First Lady and other top women to restore the dignity of our women. Lots of work was put in the gender equality movement that was scripted into gender disorder. Murambinda says, the Zim we want is a nation. All necessary steps are taken in safeguarding children and protecting women from all forms of violence. A Zimbabwe where men are protectors and not abusers, where gender equity and equality is upheld. Peter's Glory says, a woman's place does not end in the kitchen. Give her the right to be educated and she will not only make her home, but also the world a better place. WCO Zimbabwe says, men are also calling for equal representation in leadership and decision-making positions. We have females who are qualified to be generals, but we saw none during the transition. Trevor Davis says, Zimbabwe, do we have no women with any expertise on Zim. The gender imbalance all week from all media channels inside and out is appalling. Timothy Stamps, who served for more than a decade as Zimbabwe's Minister of Health and Child Care, has died. The Zimbabwe Medical Association says he died of lung infection yesterday. Stamps was 81 years old. The Welsh-born doctor first served in the colonial government, where he advocated for greater health care access for the country's black majority. He served as Zimbabwe's Minister of Health from 1986 to 2002. He was credited with work to slow the spread of HIV/AIDS in the country. The United Nations reports remarkable progress in containing the virus that causes AIDS. AIDS still kills, but in its latest report, UNAIDS said access to treatment has risen significantly. The UN's goal is to end the pandemic by 2030. VOA's Carol Parsons spoke to one of the world's leading scientists about whether this can be done.
Dr. Anthony Fauci has been working to end the AIDS pandemic since the 1980s, when having HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, was a death sentence. Now people with HIV can have a normal lifespan if they take their medicine as prescribed. Fauci is a world-renowned doctor at the U.S. National Institutes of Health. He says we have the tools right now to end AIDS.
What I mean is that we have extraordinarily effective drugs. But recently, those drugs have been shown over the past few years not only to save the lives of the people who take the drugs, but also to bring the level of virus in an infected person so low, below detectable level, that it makes it virtually impossible for that person to transmit the virus to someone else.
UNAIDS reports that 21 million HIV-positive people are on treatment. That's more than half of all those living with the virus. There are even drugs available to prevent those who do not have the HIV virus from getting it. But there are 16 million people infected with HIV who are not on therapy, and many of them don't know they have the disease, so they continue to spread the virus. And that's why, even with the tools we now have, Fauci doesn't see an end to AIDS.
In order to get a durable end to the epidemic, we would be greatly helped by an HIV vaccine.
A clinical trial for an AIDS vaccine took place in Thailand several years ago. That vaccine proved to be 31% effective. Compare that to the measles vaccine, which protects up to 99% of those who get vaccinated. We asked Fauci if scientists can develop an AIDS vaccine that is that good.
I don't think we're going to get there with an HIV vaccine, but even a vaccine that's 50-55, at the most 60% effective, together with the implementation of the other advances we have, I believe we could turn around the trajectory of the epidemic and essentially end it as we know it.
Another vaccine trial is taking place in South Africa. The results won't be in for a while, and there's no way of telling if it will be good enough to help bring the epidemic to an end. Meanwhile, getting more people tested, getting more people on anti-AIDS drugs, consistent use of condoms, and limiting the number of sexual partners are the tools we have at hand to reduce the spread of AIDS. Both Fauci and UNAIDS say ending AIDS is up to the global community and how much effort and money it's willing to commit towards this goal. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
That is it for us this evening on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. I'm Chidonjere. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA's Shona and Ndebele broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time. Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com.